So we now move to chapter 5 of the book of Genesis, and it's a genealogy, a priestly genealogy, and there's a list. The English spelling varies from Bible to Bible. Even the Hebrew is a bit variant, so we're dealing with very ancient stuff here. But look at it carefully and you'll notice already you can see a big change. In chapter 4, we had Adam, Cain, and then from Cain went all the way down here to Lamech. And they were developing the evil that Cain produced, the wonder of industry and so on, but the evil goes right back to this braggart called Lamech. Here, so that you can't have it both ways, here you've got, and at the end of that, Adam had a new chance. Adam, Seth, and Enosh, or Enos. Here, the priests have Adam, Seth, and Enosh, the new beginning. But look, Lamech. Lamech is descended from Seth. Well, he can't be descended from both. So you've got two different stories, that have handed down, we're not sure where from, that have come together in the text, and I mentioned it earlier in the last. The authors were very careful. They didn't want to, because there was a contradiction, they didn't want to eliminate anything in case God was revealing something wonderful to them that one day we might get to see. So let's look at this priestly genealogy of chapter 5 of the book of Genesis. This is the list of the generations of mankind. And I know you probably don't speak Hebrew, but if you look at the little word in brackets, it's Adam. Adam is humankind. This is the list of the generations of mankind when God created mankind, again, Adam. He's not talking about a person. He made them perfect, because humankind is male and female. He made them in the likeness of God, say the priests. Male and female, he created them. And he blessed them. And named them Adam, humankind, when they were created. Now, Adam is the name of the first male. So you're watching the shift. It's all right, they're happy with it. When Adam now had lived 130 years, he became the father of a son in his likeness. Just as Adam was made in the likeness of God, here his son is made in the likeness of Adam, according to his image, and named him Seth. The genealogy here and the genealogies all through the Bible and the genealogies in the New Testament as well, which continue that, you would have all noticed that they're all male names in the genealogy. And that, in their understanding, was absolutely necessary and quite appropriate because they didn't understand human biology. So they had to live within the limits of their science, let's put it that way. And what they thought happened, they didn't know anything about the female ovum. They just assumed that the male had what's called a seed, just like a tree has a seed, and it drops the seed into the ground. And then the ground's job is not to determine whether it's going to be an acorn or a wattle or whatever. The earth's function is to nurture that seed and to bring it to maturity and to help it grow. That was the image they had for male and female. The male had a seed. Well, we know the male doesn't have a seed, but they thought it was. And then the male gives it to the female and she beautifully nurtures it in her womb and then for the rest of life. Therefore, of course, the genealogy has to be male because it's the males that hand on life, not the females, in their misunderstanding, in their lack of understanding. Well, all of us can only speak and write within the limits of our understanding. We can keep trying to refine it and learn more, but in their day, this was a universal view, and it was for many, many, many years, including the New Testament period, and that's why Jesus calls God Abba. We have no record of him ever calling God Imma, because he couldn't call God Imma. He and all his culture saw God not as the one who receives life and nurtures life, but who gives life, therefore male, in their image. So he lived 130 years, he became the father of a son who's in his likeness, according to his image, both words picked up from their first account in Genesis chapter 1. And he named him Seth. The days of Adam after he became the father of Seth were 800 years. And he had other sons and daughters. Thus, all the days of Adam lived were 930 years. And then, I don't know why, he died. Well, it's quite young, really. So we'll come back to this, why these figures are so big. We're not dealing with birth certificates and that. These are the heroes of the pre-flood time. Now, if you're interested in this, when Seth had lived 105 years, it's about time anyhow, he did something, he became the father of Enosh. In the meantime, he was mowing the lawn and helping the Vincent de Paul and on the church council. But by the time he's 105, he thought, it's about time I had a child. So he became the father of Enosh. Seth lived after the birth of Enosh 807 years. Wow. He had other sons and daughters, which they're unnamed. Thus, all the days of Seth were 912 years. And he died. I've already mentioned that the line of Lamech, and Lamech in this account will be the father of Noah. So it's quite a lovely line, really, coming through Seth and producing the wonderful Noah that saved the world. When Enosh had lived 90 years, so they're learning, and they're learning younger and younger to have kids, he became the father of Kenan. Now, is Kenan an alternate dialect in this part of the world for what's called Cain in the other one? I think so. 815 years he lived after the birth of Kenan. Thus, all the days of Enosh were 905 years, and he died. When Kenan had lived 70 years, he became the father of Mahalalel. In chapter 4, which we've just done earlier, one of them's called Mahuyael. No doubt a dialectic difference for the same name. He lived after the birth of Mahalalel 840 years and he had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Kenan were 910 years and he died. Forget the numbers, though, I'll come back to them. They're tracing this, they're ancient, they want to, the Jews want to, because they come, they're Semites, so they come from Shem, who's the son of Noah. So that's their link back to the flood times. Now, in the pre-flood times, they've got Noah going from Adam. So they are claiming to belong to the ancient family of the first man. So when Mahalalel had lived 65 years, he became the father of Yared, called Irad. And you can see the same name. Mahalalel lived after the birth of Yared 830 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Mahalalel were 895 years, and he died. When Yared had lived 162 years, he became the father of Enoch. Yared lived after the birth of Enoch 800 years and had other sons and daughters. You can see it's a pattern to be remembered and sung. Thus all the days of Yared were 962 years, and he died. When Enoch had lived 65 years, he became the father of Methuselah. Enoch, this is all we know about Enoch, and he remains a very mysterious figure all through the biblical history because of this. Enoch walked with God. How beautiful. Just as Adam and Eve walked with God before they sinned. Enoch walked with God after the birth of Methuselah 900 years, and he had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Enoch were 365 years. Enoch walked with God, and notice it doesn't say he died. He was no more, because God took him. So in the folklore of the ancient peoples, Enoch didn't die. He's taken by God, as later on Elijah will be up in the fiery chariot. He's taken into heaven, and they're wondering what all this is about. So when they start writing, just before the time of Jesus, their stories about the beginnings of things and the ends of things, Enoch is always the one who takes them through heaven and shows them whatever is in heaven. It's imagination, of course, but it's quite lovely. And they choose Enoch because he's not dead. He's alive somewhere in the mystery of God. So you have the first book of Enoch, the second book of Enoch, the third book. So they pile on each other, wondering, as the Romans do later, they're wondering about what happens as, who's the famous Italian, help me, who wrote Il Purgatorio, etc. You all know. Yeah, he wrote Il Paradiso, all right, somebody with a younger brain than 81 will come up with it, because you all know it. Anyhow, they've got, and he's leading them through heaven, and Beatrice is there, and so on. So he walked with God. He was no more here, because God took him. And Enoch is mentioned in the book of Hebrews in the New Testament and the book of Jude. When Methuselah, and there's an equivalent in the chapter 4 we looked at, Methusael, clearly the same name. When he'd lived 187 years, he became the father of Lamech. And Lamech got a very bad press in the earlier document. He doesn't here. Methuselah lived after the birth of Lamech 782 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Methuselah were 969 years. Isn't that the song, this Negro spiritual? Methuselah lived 900 years. Well, he lived 969 years. Don't take it away from him. And he died. You're probably not finding this terribly inspiring, but I want you to see the whole book, sir. Lamech had lived 182 years, and he became the father of a son. He named him Noah, saying, out of the ground that Yahweh has cursed, this one shall bring us comfort. The Hebrew for comfort is Naham. From our work and from the toil of our hands. And we'll come back to Noah in a big way tomorrow. Lamech lived after the birth of Noah 595 years and our other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. After Noah was 500 years old, Noah became the father of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Shem of the Semite peoples, including the Jews. Ham is Egypt and Sudan, and also Assyria and so on. And Japheth is Europe, the Greeks and West, as they understood their world. So there you've got a comparison, not that it's a terrific interest, but I'll just say it once and look at it, between the Yahwist genealogy and the priestly genealogy in red. And in the Yahwist one, as you can see, the one we did this morning, Adam, Cain, and then these names here, finishing with Lamech, not finishing in a good place through Cain. The development of the evil in the world, which is going to be the cause for the flood. However, Genesis chapter 4 also had Adam, Seth, and Enosh, a new beginning. Up here, in the priestly document, you've got Adam, Seth, and Enosh, these three here. Enosh is the father of Kenan and Lamech, Noah, and the three sons of Noah. Let's look at the one little comment on the lives, the length of lives prior to the flood. Josephus, an author of the first century, a contemporary of Paul of Tarsus, a Jewish general in the anti-Roman war, and then he went over to the Romans and he wrote a history of the Jewish wars and so on. He can call on Egyptian, Chaldean, Phoenician, and other ancient witnesses for the remarkable and gradually receding lifespan of people, says a modern scholar, Delitzsch. Now, there are variations in the manuscripts, so you don't get too caught up in the details. The Masoretic text, the Hebrew text, adds up, if you add all the years of the people we've just mentioned, to a total of 1,656 years. The Samaritan text adds up to 1,307, the Samaritan Torah. Why they're different, I don't know. The Greek translation of the Hebrew text adds up to 2,242. So they're all figures all over the place. They were wonderful, they were long, they were marvellous, they were heroic, but there's no details that are in common. Now there's a Babylonian king list also, which they've discovered in their archaeology. It adds up to 4,432,000 years. These are the 10 kings of Babylon. So they all liked this long life. Now back to our text. Sexual violence and arrogance, as human corruption spreads. This is a Yahwist. We've had the genealogy from the priests. Now we're back with the Yahwist, the one who wrote the story of Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, and now. When human beings, Adam, began to multiply on the face of the Adama, the ground, and daughters were born to them, the sons of the gods saw how beautiful were the daughters of human beings. And they took wives for themselves from them all, from whomever they might choose. Yahweh said, "My spirit shall not remain forever in human beings, because their flesh, let their lifespan be 120 years. So in punishment for all this behaviour of the lords, the warlords, seen as the sons of the gods, etc., they are now reduced. We won't live any more than 120 years. So cheer up. Another strange little text, Genesis 6:4. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, even afterwards, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of Adam, the daughters of human beings, and bore children to them. These were the heroes of days gone by, the men of renown. There are echoes here of the myths which see the great heroes as being the result of the union of the gods, for example, in the Greek world, Zeus, and some virgin that he finds and impregnates, and then so the king, who's the founder of our dynasty, is born of a god and a virgin. His interest is in the warrior class, who act like gods and take it upon themselves to take any women they choose. The Pharaoh is an example. The Pharaoh, as is David. David, who sinned against Uriah by having him murdered to cover up David's sin with Uriah's wife Bathsheba. Now general corruption and disorder spreads. And again, blue were with the Yahwist. Yahweh saw that great was the evil of Adam, not Adam, but humankind, on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of their heart was evil all the day long. And Yahweh regretted that he'd made mankind on the earth, and he was grieved at heart. So Yahweh said, I will remove humankind, whom I've created, from the face of the Adamah, the earth. Human beings, beasts, creeping things, and the birds of the heavens, for I regret that I made them. But, thanks be to God, in their story, Noah found favour in the eyes of Yahweh. So the whole world is corrupt. God blessed all these animals and birds and humankind in one blessing back in chapter 1. But now God says, I'm sick of it. Their inclinations to evil, they'll never learn. I'm going to wipe it all out. And as they see it, God would have wiped it all out except for the power of one, except that he found one person who was faithful. And there's a story in that for us too, the power of one. Genesis 6, chapter 9, we're now in the priestly, they're threading it all together, the editors. The priestly document reads, these are the descendants of Noah. Noah was a just man. You know someone else in the New Testament who's called that? Joseph. Noah was a just man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God, just like Enoch walked with God. A lovely way of saying lived a saintly life. Noah fathered three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth was corrupt in God's eyes. The earth was filled with Hamas, violence. God saw that the earth was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted its way on the earth. And God said to Noah, I've determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. Now I will destroy them along with the earth. Creation was chaos leading to a beautiful, harmonious order. Chapter 1 of Genesis. Now, because of sin, corruption, violence, order is going to go backwards and we're going to end up with chaos again. A deconstruction of the order of the universe. In the priestly redaction, violence is the sin that threatens to destroy the harmony created by God. In contrast to the very good that God created. And here's one of the very few references to this. This is the book of Ezekiel. We looked at it once before, but I'll read it again for you. You, says Ezekiel the priest in exile about Tyre, you were blameless in your ways from the day you were created till wickedness was found in you. Through your widespread trade, you were filled with violence and you sinned. So I drove you in disgrace from the Mount of God and I expelled you, O guardian cherub, from among the fiery stones. Your heart became proud on account of your beauty and you corrupted your wisdom because of your splendor. So I threw you to the earth. Here's Jeremiah chapter 6, writing before the destruction of Jerusalem. As a well pours out its water, so she pours out her wickedness. Violence, here it is again, and destruction resound in her, Jerusalem. Her sickness and wounds are ever before me. Take warning, O Jerusalem, or I will turn away from you and make your land desolate so that no one can live in it. A prophet picking up this ancient stories that were wandering around the place, and here you've got an example of it. Jerusalem is going to suffer what the whole cosmos was suffering because of corruption. Now God gives an instruction to the one just person on earth, and one's enough, because God won't punish the just. Make for yourself an ark. That's how we're used to translating it, and I'll keep it that way. The Hebrew is teba. But it's of some interest that the only other place where teba exists in the Hebrew Bible, that's the word for the basket in which Moses was placed by his big sister. And the Pharaoh discovered it, Pharaoh's wife. And she looked after Moses and brought him up. So this teba is a place of salvation, a place of life. We'll see more of it in a moment. So he's to make an ark of cypress wood. Make rooms in the ark, cover it with reeds, coat it inside and outside with pitch, which is what they used to do on the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. This is how you are to make it. The length of the ark is to be 300 cubits. And I worked out that's 135 metres. Its width is 50 cubits and its height is 30 cubits. Make a roof for the ark and finish it to a cubit above and put the door of the ark on the side. Make three decks, lower, middle and upper. That's someone's imagination of what it would look like. It's quite a big building. Now, the ark is a microcosm of the whole cosmos. Three levels. The underworld, down below, Sheol. The earth and the sky, where we live and the birds live and the animals and fish live. And then, the heavens. So they're the three levels of how they imagined their world. It's a symbol of the temple. The temple was in three decks, 60 by 20 by 30. If you look up the book of Kings, 1 Kings 6:6, it says that. For my part, says God, I'll come back to the ark in a moment, for my part, I'm going to bring a flood of water upon the earth. This was the only image they had of destruction, because in the Mesopotamian area, where all this comes from, there's no forests, it's alluvial plain, and you've got the two big rivers, Tigris and Euphrates, and every now and then there would be floods, but they didn't have fire destroying anything. So flooding was the way of destruction, and they experienced floods, so they're using that as an image for this story. I'm going to bring a flood of waters upon the earth so as to destroy from under heaven all flesh that has in it the breath of life. Everything on earth will perish. Well, if you're going to be a literalist, you're going to have major problems, because you've got Mount Everest. I don't think you've got a flood going above Mount Everest. This is the image they're using, because they're used to floods, but this is a massive flood, imagined flood, covering the whole of the creation. But, thank God for this. So I'm going to flood the whole earth. God says, I'm going to destroy everything. We're going to go back to the drawing board. But, to Noah, I'll establish my covenant with you. So, God is faithful where his fidelity is met. Well, God is always faithful, but Noah is welcoming that, whereas the rest of the world has gone in corrupt. You are to go into the ark, you and your sons and your wife and the wives of your sons with you. And from all that lives, from all flesh, you are to bring two of each kind. Don't forget that, we'll come back to it. Two of each kind, for obvious reasons, into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. From every kind of bird, from every kind of animal, from every kind that creeps on the ground, two of all these are to come to you to be kept alive. You are to take for yourself every kind of food that's eaten and store it up. This is to serve as food for you and for them. And we're told, and I'll conclude with this because I don't want to muck up the sources, Noah did this. He did everything just as God commanded him. So it's a story. You're not going to find the ark anywhere. Put millions into it and send some American billionaire out with all his money to fill it. It's like looking for Cinderella's slipper. I don't think you'll find it. So this is all imagination. It's a way of describing, and I'll see more of it tomorrow morning with you, this beautiful ark. As we'll see, the ark is not a boat. It's very badly built for a boat, and it certainly won't survive the open sea. It's a temple. It's built according to the measurement of the temples. So it's a sacred place in which all life is, and from this sacred place, life goes out to re-begin creation. But I'll do that with you tomorrow.